This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. PopX is not affiliated with nor endorsed by Lucasfilm, Walt Disney Pictures, Marvel Entertainment, DC Comics, or any other mentioned franchise or brand. The opinions expressed are of each individual and solely do not reflect PopX Cast. Sit back, relax, put on your Ninja Turtle onesie, and warm up your chimichangas. This is PopX Cast. You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. Joe Burke, and welcome to PopX. This is PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. If you're looking in the window down below, this is not Austin Burke. This is Carlos Phoenix, everybody. Hey there. What's going on?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So, Carlos, thanks for stepping up to the plate and doing the X-Men show this week. I appreciate that, dude.
I appreciate the invitation. I enjoyed the movie, so I definitely wanted to talk about it a bit.
That's awesome, man. We definitely appreciate you having it on. And you're not a stranger of PopX. You've been on a couple episodes before, just kind of calling in the window and sharing some stuff.
So I have.
You're a wealth of information. You're a wealth of information. And a very talented artist, might I say. So check him out, CarlosPhoenix.com, by the way. But so if you missed last week's episode, episode 16, we talked to Mr. Todd Merrick. Did you happen to catch that one with the comic book owner, the shop owner?
I did not, unfortunately.
It's okay. I'll give it. You have a busy life. I understand. But be sure to head over now to Google Play or iTunes. Subscribe. Download. Give us a 5-star rating. We'd love it. All right. So, yes, absolutely. So right now we're going to get right on into the PopX news. Dan Aykroyd, he has confirmed a cameo in the new Ghostbusters film. And he says that there is more laughs and darker screams and darker moments ahead for the Ghostbusters scenes. And what are your thoughts about the new Ghostbusters, Carlos?
In the first initial commercial trailers, I felt there was a weakness involved. But when you go to the movie theaters and you see the detail of the effects,
yeah,
it's just a matter of they had to kind of go darker.
Yeah.
Especially with today's audience.
Yeah.
Back in the day, some of the cheesiness was acceptable. So they had to kind of match it with a little oomph.
Yeah, absolutely. And then right up, the next one up at Disney and Pixar, they tease a brand new character this week as well. It's just so much news. And Disney and Pixar has teased Cars 3, get this, and a new character, and his name is Cruz Ramirez. So it's going to be kind of cool. I'm a huge Cars fan, so I think it's going to be neat. Bigger fan of Pixar, so...
Well, this is also part of like what you said about women being in film. It's also another movement of Latins being in film.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In Star Wars, one of the main characters, which was killed off early. Now I'm getting an echo.
Mm-hmm.
Comes back in the film after they rewrote his part in the movie.
Yeah.
To bring him back to life. And he was a Latino in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And it's really cool seeing those roles now more prominent coming up in the movies, whether it's a female role or a minority role or something like that. We're seeing that. And, that's pretty awesome. And it speaks volumes about the industry, and it lets us know that they're listening. Someone's listening. So I'm pretty happy.
At least in Disney.
At least in Disney, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You can't say that about every film industry, but...
That's right.
So what's a buzz about Captain America this week? I don't know if you guys have been actually listening a lot or in the loop, but this issue right here, Captain America #1, I'm holding it in my hand. At the end of the issue,
He gives the call. Everybody's mouth dropped. Hail Hydra. Now, everybody, I have been asked this question across all social media. I was at the comic book shop this past week. They were stopping me in the comic book shop. Todd was like, what do you think? What do you think? And so I was like, well, you know, me and Todd were actually discussing this. It's just a Marvel plot point. I think he's infiltrating. He might be infiltrating Hydra from the inside just to be able to figure out its inner workings. Or on the other side of the token, he might be going Hydra. I don't know. What do you think, Carlos?
Well, from everything I read on this, the idea of the storyline is that he has been Hydra the whole time.
Yeah.
And what really got me interested was reading the article with talking to Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And he's expressing how he found the idea fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have thought, you know, it's one of his characters. I would have, I mean, maybe I would have been angry or offended or whatever, but he was like, you know what? That was genius.
Yeah.
And that to me was mind blowing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think those kind of changes on when you first are exposed to them, you're like, what? You know, your initial reaction is, no, this can't be. I'm used to this sense of normal. And then all of a sudden they just mix it up and blow your world away. And, you know, then it becomes like, oh, okay, I'm starting to accept this more and more. And it's the same thing with DC Comics. They did the whole Rebirth series. Marvel Comics, they did Secret Wars, kind of a rebirthing, if you will, reconcepts, rebranding of ideas. But on that concept of rebirthing and rebranding, Mega Man, the series, is coming. And this is going to be really awesome, guys. It's going to have an air date in 2017. It's coinciding with the entire franchise's 30th anniversary. Mega Man is 30. What? I feel old. Hold on a minute. Mega Man is 30. What? I can't believe it, dude. I was playing Mega Man 1 on the NES when I was a child. And now he's 30. I don't know. Did you ever play Mega Man, Carlos?
I did. The first video game. Unfortunately, I kind of parted ways with video game.
Yeah.
At an early age, but I do remember enjoying the game.
Yeah.
And there's a few other characters in that genre, that time period,
right,
that are making major comebacks now. So that's interesting to me.
That is really interesting. So be sure to look for Mega Man coming in 2017. Also, this week it is official. Dwayne the Rock Johnson is going to be the Man of Bronze himself, Doc Savage. And so that was released this week. It's going to be really awesome. Now, as we all know, if you're an enthusiast of comic books, you know that Doc Savage is actually is from the 30s and 40s, and he actually, to some extent, predates Captain America and most of Marvel and Timely Comics, and is definitely from the golden age of comic books. So to be able to bring a character of that caliber to today's audience, I'm really, really intrigued by this, see what Rock is going to do with it. But, yeah.
Now, Doc Savage, the character, when I was young,
yeah,
is one of the main characters that influenced me to become a painter.
Oh, really?
Well, because a lot of the covers were done by Boris Vallejo.
Uh-huh.
Or by Yeho, depending on how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
And that the artwork on the covers are a major influence in that time period when I used to go to the bookstore and look at the artwork of Doc Savage. And so that was a major influence for me as far as becoming an artist. So, yeah, definitely that's interesting. Awesome. That The Rock would be playing that character.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, baby. That's awesome. Also, too, Luke Cage. There was a villain released this week for Luke Cage coming on Netflix. We were just talking about Netflix. And Luke Cage is coming this September. It's going to be the continuity of the MCU on the Netflix series. Luke Cage is going up against a new villain called Diamondback. Now, we have our picture of Diamondback there. Turns out that he is one of Luke Cage's friends. And I think, Mike, too, we may have a picture of Diamondback when he was in the old retro 60s comics. I don't know if you have that picture readily available, but it's kind of cool to see them and compare and contrast. It's really neat how they're making these characters kind of into the modern era, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do appreciate and admire what they're trying to do with that. And also, we're getting ready to round up the news for this week, Carlos, as we get ready to go into the feature of our podcast, which is going to be X-Men Apocalypse. John Wesley Shipp is going to return on The Flash and as DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Now, this is in the rumor mill. Look at that. John Wesley Shipp, Jay Garrick himself. This is going to be really cool, but it's going to be the season finale of DC's Legends of Tomorrow. We saw that the Wave Rider crashed and that Team Legends were faced with a brand new character from this Wave Rider, an alternate Wave Rider, and his name was Rex Tyler, and he is the Hour Man. And he merged, and he said, "I need your help." He didn't say what time, what era, where he was from. He said, "I need your help, and I am from the Justice Society of America." I was like, "What?" So Justice Society predates Justice League of America. So it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to be able to see that. So I thought that was neat. So get ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the storylines with the different parallel worlds and then, of course, timelines and the fact that he was the actual Flash in the original TV series. I just love how they're treating all these characters and actors and allowing them to play in the modern version of these things.
Wow. Yeah.
But then now interesting that they're putting the Legends of Tomorrow in it because that's just a whole other layer.
Oh, yeah.
On top of this.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they're giving him something more heroic because it was always sad when I saw him, the original Flash, in jail as a character in the current Flash.
You know, on a side note here, John Wesley Shipp is the only character to play Henry Allen, Barry Allen, and Jay Garrick. Think about that.
That's pretty sick.
That's pretty crazy, right? So,
but what's cool is, and you may know this already, Mark Hamill has acted in both series as the same character.
Really?
So Mark Hamill played, I think...
He played the trickster, right?
Right. Well, he was the trickster in the original Flash and in this series of The Flash as well.
Mm-hmm. He did. And they're actually saying that he's going to be coming back yet again for another cameo coming up. So,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's always awesome. Moving on here, we have a nerd nugget coming to you right now, and this is going to be really awesome because Lindsay Badger, our own Lindsay Badger, God bless her, she's out there and just enjoying life, living it up, and she is going to be delivering us right now a nerd nugget from the San Francisco Bay. Lindsay Badger, take it away.
Girl. Oh my God, it's a nerd nugget.
Hey, it's Lindsay Badger, and here's this week's Nerd Nugget from the beautiful San Francisco Bay in Fisherman's Wharf. Did you know that when they planned on creating the X-Men, that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby was going to call the series the Merry Mutants, but Marvel's publishers didn't really like that name very much, and so they asked them to rethink the name because they were afraid that people wouldn't understand what a mutant actually was. They did come up with a variation of the title that was going to be just The Mutants, but that was turned down as well, and eventually the title did become X-Men. Now, the reason why the word X-Men was chosen was because in the first issue, Charles Xavier was explaining to his team that they were extraordinary people that had powers that humans did not, and hence X-Men for extraordinary powers. So that is where the name X-Men came from, and that is your nerd nugget this week. This is Lindsay Badger reporting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay and Fisherman's Wharf, and I hope you guys have an excellent show. See you later.
Lindsay Badger, she was saying that the Merry Mutants, that X-Men was supposed to originally be called the Merry Mutants.
Really?
Yeah. It's just like, what? Oh, man. So,
well, there was always these play on words, uncanny, amazing,
spectacular. Oh, we said that at the same time, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. But Lindsay Badger, thank you so much for taking the time and just sending us some of that. You are awesome sauce. And ladies and gentlemen, now we are actually going to be getting into our actual segment of X-Men Apocalypse. Going to be peeling this thing apart piece by piece, tearing it apart, seeing what we think, what worked, what didn't work. Of course, when I reached out to Carlos from the Lounge Network, this amazing guy right here below me, he has said yes, he did see the film, so we are ready to just tear this apart. So some things that work for me overall. Let's just get the ones that were in the A plus for me. Okay. I freaking loved Quicksilver's candid time stop moments while Sweet Dreams Are Made of This just rocked in the background. Was that not the coolest scenes ever?
He was awesome in the original movie that he was in, and he was awesome in this one. Whoever is putting that together, those scenes, mm-hmm. just is, you can tell he's enjoying the heck out of it.
Oh yeah.
Just in, I can imagine what the storyboards look like. It's such a fun scene,
yeah.
in a very dangerous moment in the film.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think just having Quicksilver, they finally did him justice, don't you think?
Yes, because obviously the alternate Quicksilver, they kind of just used him and then dropped him and killed him off in the Avengers,
yeah.
and that wasn't fair. But this guy, there was a lot of talk about the costume that he's wearing.
Yeah.
Because there's a little bit of a cheesiness to that costume, like the silver jacket and stuff like that.
With the silver slacks and the silver,
yeah. But that actor makes it work.
Yeah.
And then that with the effects and everything. Awesome scene. Best scenes in the whole film, actually, in my opinion.
Yeah. I just love how they filmed that entire thing. And I was watching a thing over on the internet about how they did it. And it was just so really cool because they were actually doing a 3,000 frame per second camera, standing at 90 miles an hour through a film set. So, yeah. It was crazy. I don't know how they did it, but they did it.
Yeah, I actually posted on Facebook some of the behind the scenes of
did you?
Those scenes.
Did you?
And it's fun to watch even that.
That's crazy. And so I also liked the beginning of the film with the creative backstory of Apocalypse himself. I love how they kind of went back in time and they showed how he can transfer his consciousness from one being to another, from one mutant to another. I really mm-hmm. enjoyed that. It was really cool to see that backstory and that dynamic. What did you think about the origin story of Apocalypse on screen?
I didn't get the origin.
Yeah.
So he already existed. It didn't explain who he is, what he is. I thought originally in those scenes that he might be alien.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I'm still waiting for that origin story of, well, how did he become the first? Did he have a mom and dad? I mean, you know, how did it happen?
Mm-hmm. And I thought that we get some comments over here in the, by the way, just not on a little side tangent, PopX actually has her own chat room. If you go to popxcast.com/live, you can actually get this, talk with us in real time and banter back and forth with us. So it's really going to be cool. So what did you think with the surprise ending of Jean Grey unleashing her true psychokinetic powers of the Phoenix to tear into Apocalypse? What did you think about that?
You fast-forwarded through the whole movie. Okay.
I know. All right,
fine.
I know, man.
All right. I knew it was going to happen only because it just kind of – everybody's getting their butt kicked.
Right.
The guy was too powerful right. and is like, well, who's left? And unless Magneto wishes him to go ballistic, which he did, and it still didn't work, I was like, there's only one person I can think of that can go above and beyond.
Yeah.
And so watching her – very impressed.
It was beautiful, actually. Yeah, it's
so clean, so well done.
To see the Phoenix emerge behind her as an aura of energy mm-hmm. and kind of foreshadow, I just foreshadow. I'm sorry, Lindsay Badger over in the chat room is cracking me up. That little She's got an emoji.
Hold on, no, that's PopX Cast.
It's popxcast.com/live, and we have a little chat room going on there, and you can connect socially. You can log in with your Facebook and your Twitter, whatever you want to use. It's really cool. She's cracking me up over there in the chat room. She's got this little emoji, and he's just talking. Cool. He's talking away. I thought that was a really cool dynamic, and it really foreshadowed the original trilogy of X-Men. And I like that because, now, mind you, I'm not a big fan of X-Men 3, of how Jean Grey totally obliterates Professor Xavier and just goes crazy. And not a huge fan of that. Just want to get that out there.
Yeah, well, I'm not a fan about the how they've... All the movies don't connect that well for me.
Yeah.
The actors do. I think the actors are great. But none of the consistencies in time, who the characters are, what occurs in time, it's just jarbled.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's confusing.
I agree. And it is confusing. And I think that, you know, there's just so much going on there, so much backstory that people aren't – it's just like, what just happened? What did I just see? There's no setup. There's nothing. But anyway, I digress. We're getting off on tangent. Just for the record, Bryan Singer did not direct X-Men 3. He was over directing Superman Returns at the time. So he wasn't a part of that whole fiasco. Let's kill Charles Xavier. So yeah, you can't blame it.
But Charles Xavier was not dead.
No, he's not dead.
He didn't die in that movie either.
No, because none of it happened, thanks to Days of Future Past.
Well, no, even in the movie, if it did happen, it still didn't happen.
Wow, you're really going deep on me, Carlos.
Well, if you read the comic.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, yeah.
Okay, yeah, he transferred his...
His consciousness. His
consciousness to the... okay, well, we have to talk about that.
Dude, I'm telling you, we could do a whole podcast alone just on the evolution of X-Men from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I'm not lying. We can go deep. But anyway, it was cool really to see how Charles Xavier lost his hair. Because, I mean, does he just really shave it? What happens there?
Right.
You know, so we always wonder, why is he bald and why is he permanently bald? And so it was really cool to see that. It was really cool to see how during the transfer from Apocalypse's consciousness into Charles Xavier, and it didn't go very well. And it kind of got abrupted, and he started losing his hair because he was fighting Apocalypse entering his mind. I thought it was just a really cool.
It's different.
It was bad. It was a cool. Yeah. What was your thoughts on that, Carlos?
Oh well, in the comics, Professor X is a gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
So when he has these mental fights, you actually see him in a gladiator outfit, kind of like a ghost.
Right.
And I think this is their version of doing those type of scenes from the comics. So I think the homage to that is awesome.
Awesome.
I was impressed that it didn't take long for Apocalypse to adjust and then kind of get the upper hand. But to me, that scene was fantastic.
Yeah.
And a great way to show the strength that Professor X has.
Well, he's an Omega mutant. He's in the Omega class of mutants. There's different levels of mutants, and Omega is the most elite of the elite. Magneto is an Omega. Jean Grey is an Omega. So it was pretty cool to see that. Another thing I really liked, too, was Hugh Jackman's cameo of Weapon X, which I thought was freaking amazing. It was really cool to see that he was actually wearing, well, we may have a picture of this too, from the comics. He was wearing that head get up, the Weapon X.
Didn't have the visor, but yeah.
Not the visor, but he had the whole get up attached to the side of his head and all the little wires coming down. And it was just like, man, he really looks like he stepped right out of the pages of the comics.
Totally.
And I was really happy.
Well, there's a lot of that going on in the whole, transparently in the whole movie,
yeah,
down to Cyclops' visor,
yeah,
and the whole development of that process,
yeah. And I don't know, Mike, do you have a picture of that with the how Weapon X looked in the comics? I don't know, Mike sometimes does his own thing. I don't know what he's doing, but anyway, I digress. I'm moving on. There's a Joe-ism. I just said it. Every time I say I digress, Lindsay Badger gives me a Joe-ism. So some things that kind of didn't work for me, And so we're kind of shifting up the tables a little bit. For me, I kind of felt that they could have really spent a lot of more time expanding on Apocalypse and his true cosmic nature. Apocalypse is an immortal. He doesn't die. And he does have cosmic powers. I think they could have spent a little more time on that. And I think the actor that they had to play it, Oscar Isaac, I thought he was awesome. I thought it was a great. I mean, you look at Oscar there, and you look at Apocalypse. You can't. I mean, he looks like a older. I don't know. It's just a really great makeup, and I get it. Yeah. I was really happy with that, but at the same time,
I didn't think I would be.
You didn't think you would be?
Well, everything from the comics to even the cartoon,
yeah,
there's a particular look, and in Marvel, they've done a decent job in some movies. For example, when you look at Thanos, they really made it look like the comic book character.
Oh, yeah.
I would have thought they would have done the same thing with Apocalypse. But he's looked like a slimmed down kind of Apocalypse.
And it's really cool, though. I think one of the cool scenes was like when during the psychological battle of Apocalypse trying to enter in Xavier's mind, that Apocalypse was growing and growing, getting bigger, you know, which was in the comics, you know, he does that. He magnifies his body. But I think they could have, you know, I think he was more of a catalyst role than he was of an antagonist villain. I thought that it was just like, I thought he could be more of a big bad. When you think of Thanos or you think of Darkseid, you think of just global domination, destruction, end of the world, apocalyptic nature. I didn't really get that with him.
Well, because here they try to explain his character as the first mutant, which I don't think is correct in the comic.
I don't know if he was. I think he was the first mutant in the comic, but at the same time, I think that they spent a little too much time trying to get the four horsemen together, which they could have probably had done that in one scene.
You know? So here's my complaint. Yeah. Like you have a gripe, I have a gripe.
Exactly. Go ahead.
My gripe, we've just watched so many great movies that Marvel has released with epic battle scenes, and they had an epic battle scene here. In the most recent movies, it's good guys versus good guys, like this film.
Mm-hmm.
But the Four Horsemen, I mean, you would expect to just be out there creating chaos from the get-go. And most of the film, they're just kind of chilling.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know,
so there's no extra training. There's no kind of strategy to use them. They're just kind of like bodyguards.
Yeah, it was weird. I felt like Storm, her role as a horseman of the apocalypse, it was just weird. It was like, and she was just not even really a prominent character at all. And her, I mean, yeah, she looks awesome there.
And she looked great.
She looked great. Amazing makeup. Amazing costume.
I like the backstory too.
Yeah, the backstory was really awesome. But
the Morlocks.
But once we saw the backstory, it was done. Yeah. It was just like, okay, let's battle the big guy, and whatever happened to Storm, I don't know. Who cares? You know, that's kind of the way I felt about it. But I don't know. It was interesting. And I think the same thing could be said too for Psylocke and Angel. You know, two really awesome mutants from the X-Men franchise, and it was just like the director or the producers or whatever was like, well, let's give him metal wings. That'll make him look really cool. And then everybody else will forget about him. You know?
Well, also in the original story, Angel's wings were ripped off. And then Apocalypse
restores them. Yeah.
Here he kind of just damaged one.
Yeah. He had a damaged wing. Yeah. It was just weird. It was just like, I kind of felt like, and with Psylocke as well. Now, Psylocke in the comics, if you've read any X-Men comic in your life, she is – you do not want to mess with her. She is an insanely very crazy out there mutant, and she has so many powers and abilities and just could do all kinds of crazy things. Just Google it, all right? You don't need to take my word for it. But they only spent like 2 minutes of screen time with her. We didn't even get to know who she was, where she's from, what she's doing. I'm like, okay, so if someone is watching X-Men Apocalypse for the first time and they see this chick come out with this glowing pink blade out of her hand, they have no idea who that is. You know, we do.
True.
Because we're nerds. But we have no idea who that is.
But out of all the characters, her costume is the most accurate to the comic.
Her costume was on point. Yeah, I have to give
it
you
was,
that.
It was like literally drawn out of the comic.
Her costume was great, dude. It was a great costume, and it was pretty great. And if you've read any of the 90s Jim Lee comics, when he drew Psylocke, spot on.
Now, interesting, looking at the costumes, there was one other costume that was fairly accurate.
Uh-huh.
And this character, unfortunately, has been in most of the X-Men movies, and yet we've never seen her do anything.
Yeah.
Jubilee.
Yes. She was actually this. It was, oh, wow. I forgot all about her. Yeah. But she had the little yellow coat on with the sporty red sunglasses up there on her head.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I'm glad you mentioned that. Jubilee.
But she never does anything in the stories.
We never saw the,
but they make sure that you see her front and center.
Yeah.
Each time.
It was weird.
And then they don't use her.
I don't. And it's just like, oh, well, she's just background filler. Just let her go. Just let her be. And I'm like, what? What are you doing here? You know. But I don't know. It was really cool though. I was really wanting to see Jubilee like do some like fireworks or something.
Well, I was also hoping to see a cameo from Deadpool, but I didn't get that.
Oh yeah, that would be really cool to just see him randomly running on a unicorn in the background. I'm just saying. Bryan Singer, if you're listening to this, we need a Deadpool cameo somewhere. Funny.
I mean, if they could put Stan Lee in these movies, a Deadpool cameo would
come
be
on.
Great.
I'm sure that Deadpool. Oh my god, that would be so funny. Could you imagine that? The serious moment, then all of a sudden you get like get the old VHS like screen.
Perfect.
Oh, it'd be so funny. There he is with his unicorn and his Crocs on. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. So aside from like some of the things we like, some of the, you know, I thought the storyline overall was really cool. I thought that everything kind of flowed well. You don't really necessarily have to see any of the previous X-Men movies to see this movie. I thought that was an interesting aspect about it. So what was some of your overall like pros, cons, takeaways, anything that you have, Carlos?
Sure. Overall, I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed some of the scenes that reminded me of the comic books. I enjoyed seeing the old Blackbird. I hated seeing it get destroyed.
Mm.
I hate seeing the mansion get destroyed.
Well, the mansion gets destroyed all the time.
Yeah. So those elements I liked. I didn't like the lack of use of the apocalypse of the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
I did like seeing the power of Magneto.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on a global scale, yeah, one guy
being able to control Earth and its core and its elements.
Totally.
That was pretty. Yeah, that was a really good point because there was a point in Magneto's when he actually does evolve, and because, like I said, he's an Omega mutant. He's in the top tier class of mutants, and it was really cool to see that Apocalypse helped him to unlock that mentality that he can do that. It's not just metal objects. It's the earth. It's the elements around him. I thought that was brilliant.
But I find it fascinating that it took Apocalypse to get Professor X powered up, Magneto powered up.
Yeah.
But it did not require anything for Phoenix to be powered up.
Mm. She just
so
unleashed
just
it.
Her, by the very nature of her, was more powerful than Apocalypse. He's been around for thousands of years.
And just her mental telekinetic psychosis powers literally disintegrated Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, so in essence, do you think that Apocalypse will return or do you think he's just done?
I don't think in this Marvel universe they would need to bring him back.
Yeah, I think he's done.
And what I was hoping to find in the after credit stuff,
which we'll get to.
Introduction. Yes. I was hoping to get an introduction of what happened in the comic book in the Phoenix Rising storylines of Dark Phoenix and an alien race trying to protect the universe from her. and that this triggered it.
Yeah.
But no such luck.
Yeah. Well, so overall, if you guys are wanting to go see this film again, or you know someone who's going to see it this weekend or in the future weeks, we do have a spoiler-free review over on popxcast.com. I on the night that I saw the movie, I gave it a 7.8 review. I thought it kept continuity. It kept good character structure, aside from some small quirks here and there, which is expected. But I gave it a 7.8, and I felt that was a pretty strong rating. And I was kind of disappointed with Rotten Tomatoes. I kind of really tore into them because everybody just when a film drops on Friday, everybody rushes to Rotten Tomatoes to see what the rating is. And that's really not fair. That is like you're getting critics who are paid off. You're getting your ideologies that are just totally obscure. And people that's never even picked up a comic book before writing about a movie that they have no understanding about. I'll get off my soapbox, I promise. But Rotten Tomatoes, get your act together, okay? Anyway.
Now, I didn't see Rotten Tomatoes. Were they bad ratings?
It started at like the high 50s, like 58, and then it started just slowly going down to 52, 51, 40, 40. And it's just like this was not a 49% rated movie. This was actually a really good X-Men movie, probably one of the better ones in the franchise, I think.
All right. Well, I will start off with I'm a fan of the characters.
Uh-huh.
I think the betrayal and acting of the actors to have powers and all type of stuff has been great. I have not fully enjoyed the franchise simply because they constantly don't follow the comic book.
Mm. Yeah.
And this one was better than some of the other ones, but I can't go above a 60 on it.
Yeah.
Simply because, again, like I mentioned, the action really didn't come in until lately. The action was good. It was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Watching Quicksilver slapping the hell out of Apocalypse.
It was worth it just to see that.
It was awesome.
It was so good.
And then to think that such a little character like him, well, in the scheme of how this movie has introduced him, not because the comics put him any lower in any kind of rating. They just did a great job with that. There's a lot of holes in the movie to me. Again, the inconsistencies of the timelines between all the movies. Weapon X threw me off because, well, we just saw Days of Future Past when we got to see that everybody was fine. So I would have thought Wolverine was fine, but then I guess this is going a little bit before that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm trying to figure out where this movie kind of falls in the whole timeline of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing Havoc was fantastic. Getting rid of Havoc was not.
Not, no.
So there's a lot of things in the movie that just I felt very emotionally kind of, I want to enjoy it. I did enjoy it, but then I was very disappointed in some things. So, you know, yeah. I
could have really lived seeing Havoc survived and go into more of the battle with Apocalypse head on, as opposed to, now spoiler alert again, obviously dying off in the first 20 minutes of the film. That was kind of stupid, but I digress. Another Joeism for you. But we're going to move on to Easter eggs. Carlos, if you got your thing pulled up, we're going to go through these quickly.
Yeah, let's take a look here.
But guys, we want to thank you guys so much for joining us. We're streaming right now on YouTube Live and over on blab.im. We want to thank you guys so much for joining us. We apologize earlier for some of the sound things that we had going on. This is new to us, so we're figuring this out just the same as you all. So we do appreciate you guys just sticking it out and hanging with us as we just plow through this and get it out there. But some of the cool things that I picked up on the Easter eggs. Now, I'm not one of those guys, when I go watch a movie, I'm sitting there with a notepad and I'm writing down, okay, there's Stan Lee, there's that. I don't do that, but I do take mental notes. I thought it was really cool. This is the Easter egg number one, that the teenagers skip school and go to a mall. That was kind of a really immediate nod to Ferris Bueller. It was a Ferris Bueller type scenario, and they joke about seeing Star Wars in the film, in the theater.
And
Return of the Jedi, which is number three. And by the way, there was a really cool comment right there that was made, and it was said that, I have it right here, the third movies aren't always as good as the first. And that was an immediate jab to X3, which, as we know, is not one of the best movies in the X-Men franchise. Bryan Singer wasn't directing it or doing anything like that, but I thought it was a really cool jab. It's like, just take it. Take it.
And the fact that it's within the Disney world, I love it. Marvel and Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. And, you know, right off the bat, if you guys don't have any idea, this was set in the 80s. So they had just gotten out of the theater seeing Return of the Jedi. Pretty cool. Anyway, so we also saw the return of the Blob. I thought that was really cool. Look at that. And they, you know what? What is really neat about this is they actually did his costume some justice here. They they actually made him look like the Blob that we know, the Fred Dukes from the comics. So I thought that was really neat that they got it right. Because in X-Men Origins with Wolverine, he kind of looked weird. He kind of, the makeup was a little like, you know, Nutty Professor-ish, should I say.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that was a really cool Easter egg. And that was the scene when they were doing the cage fight with the Angel. But that was a Blob. And also, are you a Trekkie, Carlos? Do you like Star Trek?
Yes, I do.
Well, who doesn't like Star Trek? Come on. Bryan Singer, as some of you may or may not know, is a huge Trekkie. Even so much that he actually appeared in Star Trek as a uncredited crew member in Star Trek Nemesis. We have a picture for that, too. With the original Professor X himself, Mr. Patrick Stewart, shall we say. So it was kind of cool. So very early on, Mr. Singer was kind of rubbing elbows with the future leader of the X-Men. But when we visit Storm's home, we see a TV playing on an old Star Trek. We see the TV playing. It's an old episode of Star Trek, and it was from season 2. Now, I don't know how much of a techie you are, but this is going to really – the episode is called Who Mourns for Adonais? Okay? We have a picture for that. All right. Now, this Trek episode foreshadows the future events of Apocalypse, which focuses on the team encountering a powerful godlike being who can grow to amazing heights. So it was kind of cool. Now, Singer, being a Trekkie that he is, knew this episode, incorporated this episode, and just had everything tying into this universe. So I thought that was kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, have you ever seen those old school Star Trek episodes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I grew up on this stuff.
I did too. Me and my dad would always watch them together. It was so cool. Also, Stan Lee's cameo. Now, that one was really cool. What did you think about that one?
I thought it was very cool, especially now that he's, 94? Yeah.
Something like that. God bless him.
And so, very cool scene. I think that was his wife, isn't it?
That is his wife. That is his wife, Joan. And it was one of the cameos that you kind of just makes you sit back in your seat and you're like, that was really sweet. To spoiler alert, Apocalypse disarms the entire world of nuclear arms and sends all the nuclear warheads straight into outer space. And Stan Lee is sitting in his front lawn at his porch, holding his wife, his real-life wife of over 50 years, Joan. He's clutching her, and then it zooms in on Stan Lee's sunglasses, and you just see the nuclear warheads going up. It's really cool.
Now, that's an interesting concept in terms of getting rid of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
In a world full of mutants, and now there's no ultimate weapon to stop mutants with.
Yeah. There's nothing. Apocalypse single-handedly disarmed the entire world. That's pretty awesome, I think. But Stanley's cameo was kind of bittersweet, I think. It was like, because we know.
How much do you want to bet this is probably his last one?
Dude, don't say it. Please don't say it. Oh,
he's 94.
You're tearing my heart out, man.
But believe me, it's going to be like when Steve Jobs passed.
Oh, man. Stan Lee is – well, if you guys aren't in the loop with Stan Lee, this is going to be his last year ever attending a comic book convention. New York in the fall is his last ever, and he is done. He said he can't tour. He can't travel no more. He's going to spend the remainder of his years with his wife, and he's done. So – We did it at the same time, Carlos. I know. And so we're just like, okay. It was tearful. If you see this cameo, you'll understand why I say it was bittersweet. Because we don't know. It might be his last one.
I've grown up with this comic stuff, like we've talked before. I worked at Marvel very briefly. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I started working at Marvel is when Marvel was falling apart.
Right. I remember that.
And art directors were getting fired and artists were getting let go and people were jumping ship and let's say starting Image, for example. That's kind of where I was trying to get into the industry. And I've met Quesada a few times. I've met Stan Lee a few times in shows and all that type of thing. And in his mind, you can imagine his world is falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're fast forwarding a certain amount of years and being able to see what it has become for him, like a mission accomplished of, you know, all my mind visions of all the things he used to imagine can now be seen in a way that the rest of the world who didn't read comics can enjoy.
Yeah.
That's an amazing accomplishment for that one man to have.
And like you said, you put him up there where he belongs. I mean, he's in the level of Steve Jobs. He's one of the front runners. I mean, he is an iconic legend. Need I say more?
I mean, he basically blows away George Lucas in terms of
Predates George Lucas, that's for sure.
Sure, but what one person has had this many movies in this condensed amount of time based on tons of different characters?
Yeah.
There is no, I mean, the closest thing I thought was maybe James Bond.
Yeah.
But that's just one character.
Yeah.
This one man imagined this entire universe of characters, and now we get to sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And if we were kids that read the comics, we're getting the chance to sit back and enjoy his imagination.
Absolutely. Real quick, before we finish up on our Easter eggs, I want to thank everybody for joining us right now over in the PopXcast.com chat room. If you go to PopXcast.com/live, you can not only see our live stream every Sunday night at 9 p.m., which is usually normally when we stream, but I want to say hello to all of our friends over in the chat room. We've got Lindsay Badger holding the chat room down. Johnny Papas is hanging out with us. We got Stacy just hanging out with us, chilling. All you guys, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us over in the chat room and keeping the chat active and healthy. I love it. Thank you. Moving on, we got another Easter egg for you. Was Weapon X actually wears the headgear? We talked about this a moment ago. He wore the headgear, and I wanted to – that was kind of an Easter egg moment because it was an Easter egg throwback to this issue right here where we see him with that headgear on. So that was pretty cool. And so that was a nice little Easter egg. And I missed the little pink visor. If they would have just, I know I'm being picky. I can't tear it apart like that. But you know, they have to do with what worked.
Well, a little bit on the Weapon X. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
He's extremely violent in this movie.
Yeah, Berserker range.
It's leading, I believe, into the next Weapon X movie or Wolverine movie, which, to my understanding, is another rated R movie.
Yeah. It.
So that's going to basically show that it will be even more violent.
Correct. You are correct, man. Wolverine 3 has been confirmed to be a rated R film. And I don't think it's going to be like a Deadpool rated R. I think it's just going to be all-out war. I think it's going to be brutalities. Yeah, slashing, hacking, blowing up, bombs going off, the whole nine yards. So get ready for that. And the last Easter egg, of course, is of the Phoenix. We had talked about Jean Grey just exploding into her aura of the Phoenix earlier. That was a really cool Easter egg and a foreshadow of the actual events of Apocalypse. So that was another little Easter egg nugget for you there. So now let's talk a little bit about the end scene credits. Now, this is where there's a huge shift coming up into the whole world of X-Men with Fox. The end scene credits, they have the we see some guys walking into the facility where Weapon X had just left. So it takes place during that scene and right after that. And they grab the samples from Logan, from Wolverine, and they're grabbing those samples and they put the samples into a briefcase. Now, it's in that briefcase. They close it and we see on the front of the briefcase it says SX Corporation, Look at that. We even have a graphic for that. Wow, that has to be highly pirated. Thanks, Mike. No, I'll just mess with you. But so there it is. There's the Essex Corporation. Now, if you know it, no. I knew exactly where that was going because I've read the comics. If you don't, all right, say his name. Go ahead, Carlos.
Mr. Sinister.
There it is. So it is Mr. Sinister. We are setting up Mr. Sinister for the upcoming future franchises. It's going to be probably be an antagonist in Wolverine 3, maybe even a big bad. We may see him in a couple of movies. And it was really cool, though. It's kind of setting up Nathaniel Essex is Mr. Sinister, Nate Essex. And the blood samples were taken. And we do know that he is going to try to – he creates several beings. He clones Jean Grey to some extent. He also creates X-23, which becomes the new X-Men, the new Wolverine in the comics. And she actually has the two claws. So she turns good. I kind of see where Fox is going with this because this is Hugh Jackman's last hurrah. He's been doing this a long time, since 1999, almost 20 years he's played Wolverine.
Wow.
And so I think that they're setting up a new Wolverine character with doing the X-23, the blood samples, the future episodes. They're going all out for this one. So I think it's going to be really cool to see that. So let's see here. We have.
I think they should do at least one more Wolverine doing Shakespeare.
To be or not to be.
If anybody can do it, it's Hugh Jackman.
Well, he's on Broadway in New York all the time. You know that, right? Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about another Easter egg nugget for you. And you know, we were hitting on a little bit of X-23, but have you heard of the name Nathaniel Grey?
Yes.
Okay. Now, if you look in this picture, if you look quickly, you won't notice it. And a lot of people won't even pick up on this. But the little kid over on the left with the white in his hair is Nate Grey. Nate Grey in the comic books is known as the X-Man. And he is a very powerful Omega mutant. And he basically single-handedly fought many battles between Mr. Sinister and Apocalypse himself, and he was involved in the Age of Apocalypse series in the X-Men franchise. So his cameo and tie-in that he was actually his visual was dropped in this movie leads us to some pretty cool stuff coming up. Let me just drop these nerd nuggets for you. So we know that the X-Men, his cameo and tie-in to the next film is going to be in the new X-Men franchise. X-Men is an alternate version of the regular Marvel Universe hero, Cable, all right, hailing from the Age of Apocalypse, which is Earth 295 reality. He is a biological son of this dimension's, that's Earth 295's, Scott Summers and Jean Grey.
Sure.
Okay? And he is born of genetic tampering by who? Mr. Sinister. Okay, so you see the tie-in there? And so his first name is derived from his creator, which is Mr. Sinister, real name Nathan, and his last name from his biological mother, Jean Grey, Nathan Grey. There you go. So due to not being infected by the techno-organic virus, as Cable was, X-Men has achieved vast telepathic and telekinetic powers, and it made him a very big bad for a long time, so... Yes, it is cool that they are dropping this very early. What are your thoughts
on also, that? And also, because that also, excuse me.
What are your thoughts on that, man?
Well, the fact that this is now also part of the leading into Cable going into the Deadpool movie. Rob Liefeld being the artist that created Cable. There's so much intertwining.
I love it. I love it.
It's insane.
I love it.
So, it's about time that Fox is doing something very creative.
Yeah,
and they need the help.
Yeah, and I think that it was from what I'm hearing on sources, and I've been reading this on the internet, this is going to be one of the last X-Men movies to be released. I think they're going to be starting with New Mutants, and they're going to be going into some new genres of the X-Men franchise coming up in future episodes with the Gambit spinoff, which may include Mr. Sinister as well. We don't know how that's going to go, but there's some there's some films in the X-Men universe that's been confirmed. Obviously, Deadpool 2 has already been greenlit. So we know that Ron Perlman has been begging to be able to be cast as a role. We know Ron Perlman from Hellboy. We know that he's been trying his above a level best. I think he would be a great Cable. I would love to see Ron Perlman as Cable, personally. But I don't know. We'll see. But that's one of the names that's thrown in the hat for that.
Well, I'm excited about that. I'm upset to hear that it might be one of the last X-Men movies, because I think a Phoenix Saga movie would have been fantastic.
Oh, of course it would have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
And who's to say, though? Who's to say that they can't do that? Because they're... I don't know if they're completely disbanding the first three X-Men movies, mm-hmm. but they're definitely straying away from those first three X-Men movies. So, yeah, it's one of those things. And, you know, with this new Jean Grey actress that they have, they may even want to dive into that a little more, because with what we saw in Apocalypse, her just, boom, unleashing the Phoenix, they may do that. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, she needs, especially the actress,
yeah.
she needs a chance to get into that character.
Oh, yeah. And two more Easter eggs for you guys, and we're going to be wrapping this up. Man, we are literally right on the spot, Carlos. We are right almost on the hour mark. This is awesome. The last one we've been talked about a little bit earlier in the show, X-23, but she will become the new Wolverine, and she will be donning the cowl and the X-Men team logo after later in the comic story arcs. This could be Fox's very own attempt to set up a future Wolverine storyline after Hugh Jackman's final role in Wolverine 3. So we see that, and so that's a little Easter egg for you coming up. And also the last one, more X-Men history. Sinister is obsessed with Jean Grey and Scott Summers' genetics, and he creates a clone of Jean Grey called the Red Queen, which is Madeline Pryor. Now, she is a striking resemblance to Jean, and Scott ends up marrying Madeline, and they have a child. And can you guess what that child's name is?
Cable.
Oh, my God. Deadpool's time-traveling companion, Mr. Cable himself. So, as you can see, these stories are just like this. They're all interlocked. They're interdimensional. They're timeless. And if Fox does it right, it can really go good for them. But, man, Carlos, dude, thank you so much for taking out some time and just hanging with us and talking and geeking out about PopX, dude, and just some really cool, nerdy X-Men culture things.
Awesome.
I figured you would be the guy for the job. So thank you so much for stepping up to the plate and giving us an hour of your time, man. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate the invitation. This is fun.
And how can people find you on the web, Carlos? We've been friends for so long, thanks to a platform called Blab, that nobody's never seen your face. Well, they may have seen you a couple times on previous PopXs. Mm-hmm. But so how can people reach out to you if they want to contact you?
Well, you can find me on Facebook as Carlos Phoenix. On Twitter, you can find me as The Real TLN,
mm-hmm.
or at Real TLN.
Mm-hmm.
And then my content is on theloungenetwork.com. If you're just curious to see what I do, CarlosPhoenix.com.
CarlosPhoenix.com. All right. Well, be sure to check that out. And like I said, man, I really do appreciate you. We're going to wrap this up here. Make sure to call in if you're going to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles this weekend, Out of the Shadows, or you're going to see X-Men Apocalypse or Civil War for the first time. You're just right now getting around to it. Shame on you. You should have saw it earlier. Give us a call. Let us know. Give us some feedback. It's 850-417-POPX. That's 850-417-7679. Give us a call. Call us on our Skype line, and we would love to hear from you, okay? And also, you can follow us over on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, at PopXCast, okay? And if you want to reach out to us and be able to contact us throughout the week, you can do that, popxcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We love feedback from our listeners and maybe ideas for future shows. I don't know. drop us a note. And also future shows and any kind of scheduling, be sure to check out popxcast.com/live. All right. So, this is Mr. Carlos Phoenix down here rocking it out. I am Joe Burke at ROTCAV at RockHev over on the interwebs. We want to thank Miss Lindsay Badger so much for holding down the chat room, being awesome. She's on vacation and she's still doing her job. Can you get over that? I mean, that is amazing. Let's give it up for her right now. Lindsay Absolutely. Badger. All right. And I want to thank the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only Mr. Mike Ippolito over here in the window doing awesome as he always does right here in the Popix. Oh, I love you, Mike. You're so good. Oh, Mike. Oh, I couldn't do this show without Team PopX, and that's Lindsay Badger. And we also want to give a huge shout out to my co-host of the most, Mr. Austin Burke, who couldn't be here tonight. He's having some power outages, some technical difficulties. But I do want to say stay tuned for episode 18 coming to you this Sunday night, 9 p.m., June the 5th, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows coming to you. So, Carlos, thank you so much, man. We appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
All right. From everyone at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating over on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Blab, and YouTube at PopX Cast. Get your geek on.